the foundation of my lifestyle. I thought about that tent for 7 years. All the possibilities of where it could go, I took into account government regulations, I took into account the news, I took into account the design of the tent, I took into account the name of the tent. And 7 years later, I knew exactly where that was, my tent, and I found it in Northern California. And eventually I connected to a criminal ring. And that tent's right over there. How do you know it's my tent? It still had the chalk from a job that I had done, not to mention the earphones that I never used still in the pocket. Pretty impressive, I think. Anytime you expand your balance sheet with debt, you're putting more workload on the people at the bottom. Now, I don't know if you agree with my definition of inflation, but I believe that inflation is the expense of the money supply that causes the real prices of values, or the real prices, to rise. And many times we use the numbers as an indicator of inflation, when in fact what you've actually done is stolen from the inventor who has waited patiently with the solution. So the key is not to panic. I do not advise you guys to go through with this. And I am sure that there are inventors with better solutions. When it comes to the design, you're talking about zoning. I don't have enough time to get near what I need to say out. I'll say this. You're trying to solve homelessness, and you may agree on this proposal, but do you agree on the cause of homelessness? The homeless population is one of the most diverse populations there are, and it's more the outliers that you're dealing with. Oh my God, there's too much. I want to know why people can't buy hot meals with their EBT, because if you know Maslow's hierarchy, you know that shelter comes on the bottom, but I'm going to say that temperature precedes that. So when you're trying to put someone in a home, you're trying to take them out of the elements. You're trying to give them lack of stress from the temperature. Now, I appreciate you extending my time. The light rail, for example, when going to Hillsborough, that goes right to those beautiful apartment complexes. If you try and get in those apartment complexes, a one-bedroom's $1,200, very easily manageable for one to two people with a minimum wage. But the requirements are five times more than the rent month. So that's $6,000 a month times 12. Six times 12, that's what, $36,000 you're requesting for someone to live in a one-bedroom. The issue I have is that public transportation is going to apartments and excluding the people that need the public transportation the most. You know, for instance, the counterfeiters.
So I'm going to lose my quorum, and I want to make sure we take a vote. So if you could start wrapping up your thoughts, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Let me wrap it up in one sentence, if I could do that. The sustainability word, that's a loaded word, and that means more to maintain. I think we need to change the word to regenerative. And again, I just want to know if you agree with my definition of inflation, which is the expanse of the money supply, which causes the real prices to raise. And I also want to know if you agree on the causes of homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Kelly?
Thanks. Thank you for your time, commissioners and the mayor. My name is Kelly Haynes. I'm here representing the Metropolitan Alliance for Workforce Equity today. We're a coalition of trade unions, contractors, training organizations, and community-based organizations. So I wanted to just quickly say thank you for moving ahead on the housing bond policy framework. I think the work and the input the community groups and members have provided has helped to really shape an implementation framework that will maximize the positive impact of this investment. I do want to touch on a related aspect of the racial equity components of this policy framework, and one that I think has relevant and real potential to further contribute to opportunity and stability for marginalized communities. I think we have concerns regarding the lack of specific local workforce and contracting equity components and corresponding metrics and goals in the policy framework. We see this as a significant missed opportunity to ensure that this public investment not only helps to house and serve vulnerable populations on the resident side, but also ensures that the way in which the funding is spent creates real and lasting economic opportunity for those same populations. By applying a community benefits agreement on these funds, the city could ensure these important projects are structured to enhance city-community partnerships and realize significant and tangible community benefits with this investment. So I quickly want to just go through a math exercise to help illustrate this point. So the housing bond is for $258.4 million, and I think in reading the community feedback, there was a desire to balance that with both acquiring new projects and building new construction. So if I just did a quick split of half of that funding going toward new construction activities, that's about $129 million. And using estimating methodology in the industry, that's about 636,000 work hours for that amount of funding. And if you use an average wage of $25 an hour, and then apply the CBA goals to that for women and people of color, that's over $5 million in wages for marginalized communities locally. If you actually apply the performance of the CBA pilots, that's at over $8 million in potential wages for women and people of color. So I think the CBA could help provide real access to jobs by those very people facing the risk of displacement. Also, for contracting equity, if we applied the 17% CBA goal for minority and women-owned companies, that would equal almost $22 million in business revenue. And again, if we applied the past performance of the CBA pilots, which was 26%, to this funding, that figure would increase to over $33.5 million. In business revenue for minority and women-owned companies. According to the last procurement report, annual report, the percent of utilization by these same firms was under 6%. So that would be, if that was the performance of these housing bonds, that would be a loss of $26 million earned by minority and women-owned companies. So just in closing, I want to reiterate our support for the housing policy framework and all the hard work that was put into developing it. Actually, a lot of Maui members are allies and were involved in a lot of this work, like Rose CDC and Hacienda. So we are in support of that work. We just encourage the city to consider applying an already effective tool to these dollars to be able to realize multiple benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you, Garrison.
We appreciate it. I just wanted to correct myself. 6,000 times 12 is 72,000, so my numbers were off by two.
Very good. Thank you, sir. I'll entertain a motion, colleagues.
So let's vote on Dan's amendment.
Okay, very good.
Please call the roll.
You, Daly.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for raising this issue. Aye.
Fritz.
Yeah, good catch, Commissioner Saltzman. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's adopted. I'll entertain a motion.
I move the report.
Could I just have one question? Obviously, lots of really good testimony today, and you already acknowledged, Mayor, that you're working on Margaret Bax's section. I just wanted a quick answer on the
Madam President.
This
was a question on redirect from Ted Gilbert's testimony, as I recall, about the so-called turnkey development method. Under Oregon revised statutes, that would be considered an alternative contracting method. And we've broached the subject with the city attorney's office about how best to proceed and have met with purchasing several times with OMF senior staff. And we would need to come back to council with a pilot for a demonstration of how what the sideboards would necessarily be with respect to wage rate and women minority business participation.
Could I just summarize what you're saying? Is you were looking at it, and it might be possible.
It is legally possible, but needs to be constructed as a pilot, and you need to authorize that pilot. And it needs to be dollar specific, and it needs to be time limited, so that a upon completion, we go back and you, in your considered judgment, deem whether or not that pilot was successful before it becomes a regular part of our toolbox.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Further questions, colleagues? Commissioner Fish moves.
Second.
Second.
Commissioner Udaly seconds. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Udaly.
Well, this has been a very interesting and insightful hearing. I want to thank everyone who presented and gave their testimony today. I know the community has been anxious for us to start spending these funds, but I want to thank the mayor's office and the Portland Housing Bureau for taking the time and coming up with this framework that is both intentional and meaningful and focusing on goals that address historic housing inequities. I apologize, I'm a little under the weather today, so my voice is sounding a little crackly. It's clear that the process the mayor's office engaged in to tap into community expertise across the entire city was necessary to avoid making mistakes that could lead to unintended consequences and leaving out certain vulnerable populations. And we certainly got some great feedback today for further consideration around those issues. This is a finite resource that's paid for by our local residents, so anything less wouldn't have been responsible use of these funds. So thank you, Mayor. I particularly want to thank the mayor's staff and the staff from Portland Housing Bureau, as well as ONI staff, our community liaisons who played a role, and of course all our community partners, everyone who served on the committees, and last but not least, all our incredible housing justice advocates, activists, and warriors. I really don't think we'd be where we are today if it wasn't for you. Thank you to everyone on the Housing Bond Policy Committee, with a special shout out to our office's picks, including Frida Christopher, Andy Miller, and Alan Lazo. And I want to give extra thanks to Alan because he's also going to be serving on the Housing Bond Oversight Committee and continuing his commitment and contribution to this issue. With that, I gladly vote aye.
Fritz.
Well, all of the thanks Commissioner Udaly just noted. I'm very happy that we've got this resource to spend. I'm also very happy that we have community members who are going to, who were engaged and are going to continue to be engaged and pushing for different values and principles, and that's how we're going to get to a good product. So I know that the mayor will keep be very mindful of all of this input and continue to get more community advice, because it really does feel like we're all in this together. That last year when we were campaigning for the bond measure and everybody was really happy that we had something we could do to address these major needs within our community and within all the communities of Portland. So it's a good problem to have, and it's also, it's not a problem, it's a challenge which I know that we can rise together to meet. So thank you very much. I do know that when I looked through the report, I was concerned about people experiencing disabilities. That's in there, that we're going to do better than the minimum. I was concerned about should we call out women. That's also covered by vulnerable people, as are people who are already outside. Commissioner Saltzman drew attention to foster kids aging out of that system. We heard this morning on huge need for people experiencing domestic violence. And to have the Director Krager coming and say, well, we could possibly put something right next to the centre, is extremely exciting. The other thing that was addressed to my satisfaction was about the Russian communities and others. I mean, really, even a two-bedroom, it's not all that big when you're cramming 10 people into it, or two families. So we certainly do need to look out for opportunities to make it so that families have a place to stay that's actually livable for the duration. Thank you very much, everybody, for your involvement. Aye.
Fish.
I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have already said, because I think they touched on most of the key points and the thank yous. Colleagues, I do think this is one of the most interesting hearings we've had in a long time. I thought the testimony was particularly rich. Here's a couple of takeaways for me that I'll be watching as we unfold. Number one, and this is really channeling to the director of the Housing Bureau and to the Oversight Committee, I'd like to see a pilot that puts a premium on modular housing to scale. It's time. This is a resource we can use outside of an urban renewal district to do it. So let's be intentional about it. Let's frame it up and let's see what the response is. I think Margaret Bax is right. I think we now have potentially three or four different kinds of plans which have to be reconciled into what's called a strategic plan. They include the priorities of the Housing Bureau, a home for everyone, this advisory group recommendation. We can go on and on. How we knit those together, I think the challenge we have in a commission-style form of government, one of our most significant challenges, is how the five of us craft a single narrative that the public can follow about the direction and future of our city. And most of the criticisms I hear from people about local government is they're not sure what the narrative is. And I think that's in part because they hear so many different strands of the narrative. They don't have a clear and unitary narrative. And I think around housing, we have to make an effort to reconcile a number of very thoughtful exercises we've gone through and set a clear vision for how we're going to spend money. And it should be the money that's being spent not just at the city, but also at the county and with our nonprofits, because frankly, the public does not distinguish among different players and who's spending what dollar. The color of money issue is lost on most of us, much less most of the people we serve. So I think we have to have a unitary vision that involves all the resources. And I think we've actually made enormous strides in that direction. But let's see if we can sharpen the narrative. I am extremely proud that this calls out for 300 units minimum of permanent supportive housing. And I should note that next Wednesday at 10:15, Council will be taking up a resolution that has broad community support to set a goal of at least 2,000 units over the next 10 years, a goal which we're hearing from some people is not either bold enough or quick enough. So we'll have that conversation next week. But it is at least a recognition that responds to a number of the comments we had today, starting with Joe Walsh and ending with some other folks, that if we're really going to get our arms around chronic homelessness, we must have a strategy which addresses people who have faced the biggest barriers. And if we do not spend the money marrying intensive services with housing, we're not going to have successful outcomes. And that, by the way, was actually the hallmark of the 10-year plan. We just ran out of dough. And we're saying, let's go back, put old wine in a new bottle, and let's keep at it. I'm very pleased with the racial equity lens. I have to say, I've waited 7 or 8 years to have Frida or someone from East Portland come to us and say, we want our fair share of affordable housing, and make the argument that people who are low income and are going to school districts in East Portland deserve the same choices and quality that other people have. And it's not just home ownership. So I think that was something of a breakthrough. I also want to offer my thanks to the stakeholder group that obviously went through a thoughtful process. I want to thank the staff that guided that process. I want to thank the 5-person oversight body, including my nominee, for taking on that responsibility of reviewing how we spend the money. And, Mayor, I want to thank you and your team for pushing this. I do think it's worth taking a little time to get it right. I think we now have the blueprint. The director has said that in short order, a call is going to be issued so that people can respond and bring the most creative thinking in our community. I would make this, the most transparent and competitive process to get the best ideas. And, you know, we've heard from people that said preservation is the most cost-effective and environmentally friendly approach. We've heard people say new construction or some combination. We don't know until we solicit the best ideas from the community. But it's exciting. And finally, I want to close on kind of a sour note we heard from a number of people, that somehow this would not solve our housing crisis and that somehow this had been mismarketed. This alone is not going to solve our housing crisis. Any more than 2,000 units of permanent supportive housing is going to solve our homelessness crisis. But I would remind people that you have to go back to David Stockman and Newt Gingrich, who many, many years ago upstream said, if we starve the beast in Washington, we'll create a series of train wrecks down the line in the local government. And right now we're having a conversation about how the city of Portland solves a national problem. And I welcome that conversation. And I think we should do everything plus. Whatever it is, we should double it. But let's not forget it's a national problem. And so when we have fewer Section 8 vouchers to invest, when we have fewer dollars that are flexible dollars for housing development, where we have fewer dollars for HOPWA and we have fewer resources across the board, tax credits and the like, then we can do less. Or we can ask the region to do more. And the question is, at what point do we hit the breaking point where we're asking the region to take on what used to be seen as a national problem or a state problem and has now become a local concern? I'm very proud of the fact that locally we're stepping up. But our system was never intended for Portland, Oregon, to solve a national problem, and we should not have the hubris to accept that premise. We'll do what we can. This is a major step in the right direction, and I'm incredibly grateful that the Portland voters gave us this tool. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Mayor Wheeler and the strategic stakeholder advisory group for their work in just putting together this roadmap, and also to the Bond Oversight Committee, who will have been busy, but they'll be even busier now that they have this roadmap and now that the window for business will be open on October 23rd. That's really good to hear. And I really appreciate just want to thank Portland voters for being having faith in this bond measure and approving it. Aye.
Wheeler.
As was said many times over the last several weeks and today, we're in a housing crisis. The time for action is clearly upon us, and this council does have a sense of urgency with regard to the problem. Portland families need safe, accessible, and quality housing, and I believe that this strategic framework provides us a direction for accomplishing that. This past week, my colleagues and I heard testimony from many struggling Portland residents. Just this week, we heard from tenants who shared that their rent had increased 9.98%, who couldn't afford the increase and couldn't afford to move without relocation assistance, which this council put into place. We heard from members of the immigrant and refugee community that discriminatory practices were preventing them from finding quality, affordable housing. The oversight committee, or the advisory committee, the stakeholder advisory committee, has told us they want that to be part of this framework. We heard from elected officials and community leaders that this is the experience of families across the metro area and throughout the state of Oregon. The city council hears you, Portlanders. We hear you. This framework is moving us forward towards preventing displacement of our most vulnerable community members. It helps to stabilize families, and it builds the infrastructure that we need to create livable, affordable neighborhoods all across our community. Complementary to this bond are additional tenant protections like relocation assistance and inclusionary zoning that all of us are committed to strengthening, in addition to supportive housing mechanisms that ensure wraparound services are included in housing solutions, as Commissioner Fish just described. I want to thank everybody, obviously, who testified today. I want to thank you also to our invited panelists for sharing your stories and your willingness to partner with us on addressing this crisis. Thank you to the Portland voters who stepped forward to be part of the solution and entrusting us with this important resource. I look forward to continuing to work with the Bond Oversight Committee, and I'd like to thank the staff of the Portland Housing Bureau for all their hard work on this. I'd also like to thank the members of the Stakeholder Advisory Group and the Portland Housing Advisory Commission for your hard work with the Bureau, Opal Environmental Justice, MACG, and Home for Everyone for your community engagement efforts, and of course the community engagement liaisons for ensuring this process was accessible and culturally appropriate. I definitely want to thank my staff, Andrea, Cupid, Kyle, Michelle, frankly, all of them for their hard work. I vote aye. The report is accepted as amended. Thank you, everybody, and we are adjourned.